Tomorrow morning, President Clinton visits the United Nations to sign a treaty banning nuclear weapons tests and to address the UN General Assembly. Dozens of foreign ministers and heads of state are at the UN this week. Privately, the foreign officials are likely to complain about the U.S. missile attacks on Iraq and the Clinton administration's campaign to dump UN Secretary General Boutros Boutros-Ghali. Many diplomats say these are signs of growing U.S. arrogance, just like the American failure to pay more than $1.6 billion in overdue bills to the UN. NPR's Ann Cooper reports.
On the long list of UN headaches is this vexing one: how to collect the dues owed by the United Nations' 185 members. It's September already, and only about half the members have paid this year's dues. Incoming checks are so precious that UN spokesman Silvana Foa highlights each one at her daily briefings, like a teacher announcing scores on a spelling test.
Oh, good news. Oman became the 84th member state to pay everything up in full, with a check for $445,081. $445,081. Thank you very much, Oman. That only leaves us 101 left.
Within the UN system, the richer the country, the bigger its dues. And the United States has the biggest dues of all, 25% of the entire UN administrative budget, and even more for peacekeeping. The United States used to pay without too much fuss, but for several years now, driven by domestic politics and frustration at the UN's legendary waste, Congress has routinely trimmed back American contributions. The U.S. debt, the difference between its dues and what Congress actually pays, now stands at $1.6 billion. That's more than half of all the money that members owe to the United Nations, and the UN is desperate.
Guess what? Only 99 countries still owe. We're really making progress. Only 99. It's like the bottles of beer on the wall. Thank you, the Bahamas.
A company holding debts like the UN's would almost certainly be in bankruptcy court. The UN stays in business with some financial tricks, like raiding the peacekeeping budget to pay other expenses and then not paying the soldiers on peacekeeping duty. In polite terms, this might be called a bad management practice. Joseph Connor, the Undersecretary General for Administration and Management, suggests another name for it.
I've labeled it a couple of times a Ponzi scheme. That's the most imprudent business you can engage in, because you're spending, you're paying bills generated and approved for one purpose with funds that were generated and approved for another purpose without assurance that you can make the repayment.
Connor doesn't like running a Ponzi scheme, but the UN doesn't give him many tools to avoid it. There's no penalty for paying late, and as long as a country makes some minimum payments, it won't lose any rights within the UN. The Clinton administration is negotiating for a reduction in the U.S. share of United Nations budgets. If the UN agrees, the United States might start paying off its accumulated debt. Meanwhile, though, the debts keep rising, and so does the resentment among countries that pay up in full every year, like Botswana in southern Africa, which is represented at the UN by Ambassador Lekwayila, Joseph Lekwayila.
Anybody can find an excuse not to pay. And if we all find excuses not to pay, the United Nations will collapse. I think the only thing that can stop a country from paying its dues is a calamity, if there is a national calamity, which makes it absolutely impossible for a country to pay.
Lekwayila doesn't see any way to force the United States to pay, though. As he puts it, how does the UN punish the only superpower left in the world? I'm Ann Cooper in New York.
The 87th member state, 87, only 98 bottles on the wall still, right? The 87th member state has paid up. And boy, are you going to be surprised when I tell you who it is. Cambodia. Thank you, Cambodia. $108,770. And if Cambodia can afford to pay its dues, excuse me. Now we're